Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, even sometimes the great debate, but only if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero. Here's the number, 44208-601-4555. You can also SMS the show on 4478-00-00-8066. And the best of those, if they're good enough, will come up there on the comment wall. Ditto emails, which should be sent to comment@presstv.co.uk. Or you can tweet us at @comment_presstv. Tonight, the subject is one that is burning throughout the Muslim world in the run-up to the Hajj, and it's this. Can the Saudi regime be trusted with the Hajj? Fewer and fewer people think so. Just last year, and I spoke about it extensively at the time, thousands of people were killed, first when a crane collapsed on the Grand Mosque, and secondly, when the stampede at Mina occurred. Thousands died. The Saudis lied that only 700 had died. But they also promised a thorough inquiry and promised to publish its results. Both of those promises were broken. No inquiry was held. If it was, no results were published. And all efforts by other Muslim countries to be represented in a commission of inquiry into what had happened to their compatriots was flatly and arrogantly denied. The unease over the Saudis' handling of this magnificent and massive occasion every year, millions of people in a small and confined space have been arrogantly brushed aside. The whole matter burst into the public domain this week when the Iranian leader, the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, spoke about why Iranians, 500 almost of whom had been killed in the stampede at Mina, other Iranians had been killed in the collapse of the crane just a couple of days earlier, he spoke in very powerful terms about exactly why Iran has no trust left with the Saudi dictatorship. Now, this matter, as the Ayatollah was at great pains to establish, is nothing to do with Shia Sunni. Neither is what I'm saying to you now. I am not a Shia. Neither are any of the five principal people bringing you this show from London this evening. Neither are we, any of us, Iranian. But Ayatollah Khamenei was surely right that the arrogant, secretive way that the Saudi regime have treated the disaster of last year leaves one with no confidence at all that the same thing, God forbid, might not happen this year. And it's not the only problem. The sectarianization of the Wahhabi clique, which control the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, is at pains to insult, traduce, marginalize, and sometimes issue violence against any Muslim on the Hajj who does not share their very narrow and, I believe, twisted interpretation of religion. Now, this is not either anything against the people of Arabia, a great and pious people. It's certainly nothing against Sunnis. In fact, most of the trenchant critics against the Saudi trusteeship of the Hajj are themselves Sunnis. Take a look at this VT to set the scene for tonight's debate.
Those who have reduced the Hajj to a mere pilgrimage tourism trip and have hidden their enmity and grudge against the faithful and the revolutionary nation of Iran under the title of the politicization of the Hajj are puny and belittled devils who shudder as soon as the ambitions of the great Satan, America, are put in jeopardy. Saudi rulers who have obstructed the path to Allah and the Masjid al-Haram this year and blocked the way of the fervent and faithful Iranian pilgrims to the House of the Beloved are disgraced, misguided people who tie their survival on the throne of their oppressive power to defending global arrogant powers and forming alliance with Zionism and America and making efforts to meet their demand, and they do not shy away from any act of treason to that end. About 1 year has passed since the horrible Mina incidents in which several thousand people on the day of Eid and attired in the Ihram garment lost their lives tragically under the searing sun and with thirsty lips. A short while before that, at the Grand Mosque, a group of pilgrims were killed while they were in worship and circumambulation and saying prayers. The Saudi rulers are to blame in both incidents. This is something on which all attendants in Hajj and observers and technical analysts agree, and some experts even speculated the intentionality of the incident.
Well, all these claims, of course, are there to further transform Mecca into an American-style city of shopping malls and luxury hotels and the McDonaldization of the holiest place for Muslims in the entire world. They have built tall structures, a clock tower, and other luxury hotel developments, which increasingly overshadow and dominate the skyline to the detriment of what was once a pristine and precious jewel of the Orient. If you compare what the Hajj must have been like 100 years ago, even 50 or 60 years ago, to what it is like today, its character is undoubtedly transformed. Here's another VT on the same subject.
Saudi Foreign Affairs Minister Adel Al-Jubeir has accused Iran of politicizing the Hajj to get away from its internal problems. Jubeir stressed this week that the kingdom was keen on welcoming pilgrims from around the world, but the Iranian government refused to cooperate in travel and visa arrangements. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia's top cleric has stated that Iran's leaders are not Muslims and regard Sunnis as their enemy. Grand Mufti Sheikh Abdulaziz al-Sheikh said, "We must understand these are not Muslims. They are the sons of the Zoroastrians, and their hostility towards Muslims is an old one, especially with the Sunnis." Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, tweeted in reply, "Indeed, no resemblance between Islam of Iranians and most Muslims and bigoted extremism that Wahhabi top cleric and Saudi terror masters preach."
I mean, what does that even mean, that Iran's leaders are not Muslims? What conceivably can that mean? Does it mean, is the Grand Mufti, no less, of Saudi Arabia really saying that Shia Muslims are not Muslims at all? That's a very, very dangerous and profoundly wicked thing to say, and proves the extent to which it's not the Iranians that are trying to divert attention from their internal problems, it's the regime upon whom the Grand Mufti is entirely dependent for his ill-gotten gains. It's the Saudi regime that are seeking to divert attention from theirs. Let's talk to Amir Taki, a political analyst in London, to get some expert advice on this subject. Amir, welcome.
Hi there, George. Nice speaking to you.
What do you think of this subject? Can the Saudis be trusted with the Hajj?
I think one thing we can take an example from is how the Vatican City is being run. It's essentially a state within a state, and it's run independently from the Italian government, and it allows basically some kind of autonomy for people. And I think this should be essentially implemented in Saudi Arabia, allowing kind of a forum or a committee of Muslim nations from all sects and denominations to be represented and to carry out or to kind of oversee the custodianship of Mecca and Medina, because essentially it's a global event, and there are Muslims traveling from all over the world, and they need to feel that they are, you know, not marginalized, or they don't feel afraid of their lives, or they don't feel that they will possibly face death like what happened last year. So it's essential to somehow create some kind of platform to give Muslims a sense of ownership, as opposed to what's happening now.
Now, you yourself had a bad experience on the Hajj. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. About 5-6 years ago, I was in Saudi Arabia in Mecca, and we were completing a religious pilgrimage. Unfortunately, due to the fact that one of our group associates was arrested, they were taken in because the people who are managing the haram accused them of heresy because they were praying in a way that does not conform with the Wahhabi ideology. And so this led to them arresting a number of people that were with us in the group, including myself. And after we had told them that we are British Muslims, they accused us of double heresy, because one, we did not conform to the way they pray, and two, because we came from a Western country. And so it's kind of ironic that, you know, it's while it's okay for them to purchase weapons from the West, however, if someone's traveling from there, then they call them a heretic. And there is a double standard in Saudi, as we see, that while there's some segments within the Saudi, kind of population who despise the West, on the other side, you have the ruling elite and the government and who are essentially kind of buying weapons and relying heavily and solely on the West. And so we were arrested, we were beaten up. We had young people with us, and they were kind of left shocked because they're young Muslims coming from the West to kind of visit the house of God, to experience a religious experience, to undergo the pilgrimage, and they were left, you know, shocked to such an extent that a lot of them start questioning their beliefs, because, you know, it's supposed to be a spiritual journey, an intimate experience. Rather, they were faced with punches, and they were left with bruises, and it kind of, you know, leaves them rather shocked, I would assume.
Now, your solution would be, it's long been my own proposed solution also, is this Vatican model. The Vatican is in Rome, it's in the Italian Republic, but it is a politically autonomous city status for itself, which is regarded, quite rightly, as the territory and property of the entire Roman Catholic faith, 800 million strong around the world. There's almost 2 billion Muslims. They ought to have the same kind of faith in the bona fides of those running their holy places as Roman Catholics are able to have about the Vatican.
That's correct. But I think, George, what is critical and what is kind of fundamental to underline is that the way that Saudi Arabia religiously controls the shrines means that they undermine anybody who does not agree with their perception of beliefs. So if you understand, it's not just necessarily the Shias or other sects like Sufis. Rather, it's kind of, you would argue that it's up to 90% of Muslims, because a lot of people, majority of Muslims, do not adhere to the Wahhabi ideology. And it is that fear factor that should ensure and should kind of put more and more pressure on Muslims themselves to push Saudi and to allow Saudi to create a system whereby there's an autonomy. Because, I mean, if you are suspected of being somebody who does not agree with their beliefs, and they find that you're from a country that is essentially has a weak passport. So, for example, if you're from Iraq or you're from Pakistan and you do something against their religious, you know, edicts, the stuff they've issued, you potentially could be facing death. And we see this happening, you know, you see a lot of people now living in Saudi who are just simply, you know, calling for human rights, or calling for their basic rights to speak out or to have fair elections, and they are simply executed. So this is the problem. It's not that Saudi is running a very efficient, fair system, and we are asking for everyone to have a say. Rather, it is a system that essentially discriminates, undermines, and persecutes those who disagree with them politically as well as religiously. And it's the majority of the people that are not happy with this. So it's a very selfish position Saudi Arabia is in. They hold the keys to the house of God, yet they have locked it and only allow people that they wish to allow in. And when they do allow them in, they have very strict house rules that you have to conform to. And this really begs the question, is it really the house of God? Is God's house supposed to be that run? Is it supposed to be run in that practical way?
Amir Taki, political analyst, thanks very much for your expert opinion tonight on Comment. Let's talk to Abbas in Michigan in the United States. Always worth hearing. What do you think, Abbas? Can the Saudis be trusted with Hajj?
No, absolutely not, because essentially all the Saudis are collaborators with Western imperialism, and they should not have authority over the two holiest shrines in Islam.
They gave themselves that authority, didn't they, Abbas? It was King Fahd himself who appointed himself as the custodian of the two holy mosques. No Muslims anywhere else asked him to do that.
No, absolutely not. And I think the West really appointed them for this specific role, because all they are essentially are collaborators of Western imperialism. And they should not have the honor of being in control of the two holiest shrines in Islam.
Of course, none of this would be as sharp an issue if they weren't so utterly incompetent in actually running the Hajj, as these pictures make clear. And
yes,
more and more Muslims around the world are saying to themselves that they don't want to go through the eye of the needle of Wahhabi practice and ideology in order to run the risk of this.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. They are incompetent, as we've seen over the last several years, all the incidents that have occurred there. But beyond that, like, you know, the previous guests have said, they politicize this control over the Hajj, and they use it, you know, they exploit it to punish certain people and to advance a certain political and, you know, ideological agenda, which shouldn't be associated with the pilgrimage.
Absolutely right. Thank you very much indeed, Abbas in Michigan. Let's go to Denmark now and talk to Bakker. Bakker in Denmark, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Wa alaikum salam.
And I offer also my deepest condolences to all Muslims who lost their loved ones in last year's Hajj. So, and may God have mercy on the martyrs and also those who have passed away recently. So, yes. And what goes for Saudi Arabia? What goes for Saudi Arabia? They can never be trusted, because just since the last year's MP, they lied that there were 770 killed, but in fact there was over 2,000 martyred.
Well, some people think nearer to 3,000.
They kept their figure
4,000. At 770. But the point is, Bakker, they promised an inquiry. And they promised to publish the results of the inquiry. And these turned out to be lies. So, I mean, if there were no other reasons for distrusting them, how could you trust them when they could lie in the face of this disaster that happened on their watch?
Indeed, George. And those rulers in Arabia is not even hypocrites, but they are devils. Those other Persian Gulf monarchies, they congratulated Saudi Arabia for management of the Hajj.
Well, thanks very much indeed, Denmark. Bakker in Denmark. Let's go to Switzerland. We're on a tour de horizon this evening. Bani is in Switzerland. Let's hear from him. Bani, welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Galloway. Good evening to you all. God bless you for this great work you do. I hope one
Thank
day
you
will become executive of this
Thank
United
you,
Nations somehow. You see, you are too kind to say trust. First of all, who gave them this authorization? The Saudi, they put their name on the top of a country called now Saudi Arabia. This is awful. These people, they should be on the public at the moment. They should be rock dust for what they have done last year and what they are doing with Yemen and what they are doing the whole world with the Daesh and the rest of them. But I wonder why we are so naive and we let them continue. Some Muslim countries are so related to Saudi Arabia, I understand. But there are so many other Muslim countries who they should stop sending their countries, man, to this country, which is not a holy country anymore. Because it's in the hand of a people who are not correct in any manner.
You know, not in any manner at all. Bani, I'll tell you, if you were to walk down the main streets of the fleshpots of London, in Mayfair and elsewhere, you would see, as I have seen with my own eyes, row after row of gold, Maseratis and Lamborghinis, and they're all bearing Saudi plates. The idea, someone said earlier, one of our experts said earlier, that the Saudi authorities discriminated against them because they were Muslims from a Western country. Well, this Saudi regime are belly dancers for those Western countries. They put all of Arabia's wealth in those Western countries. They buy all their weapons from those Western countries. They're to be found any evening in the casinos and bordellos in those Western countries. There is no extent to which these leaders, I'm talking about the leaders of the regime in Saudi Arabia, are Muslims at all. I have not the power to designate them as devils, but I certainly have the power to designate them as hypocrites. David in Atlanta, last call before the break. Go ahead, David.
Good afternoon, George.
Good evening.
Good evening. In fact, my answer to that question is that this corrupt, reactionary, unelected, and ISIS-funding regime can't be trusted with even managing a small supermarket.
Yeah. As we say in Scotland, I wouldn't send them out to buy a loaf. To buy a loaf of bread, I wouldn't send them.
And total incompetence and ineptitude. George, a few days ago, I found out there's an excellent article, you may already know about this, article on the internet titled, How Zionism Helped Create the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. This informative article also refers to a book by a Dr. Asghar H. al-Anazi. The book is titled The Creation of Saudi Arabia, Ibn Saud and British Imperial Policy, 1914 to 1927. I have ordered this book. I haven't read it. Do you know if this book has been translated to Persian or Arabic? Do you
I haven't heard of it, David, and I'm not an expert on any Zionist influence that was brought to bear, but I do know that the Al Saud family were agents, literally paid agents of British imperialism. They only later migrated to American imperialism because it paid rather better. It's vital to accentuate this point. Arabia is not the Al Saud family, and the Al Saud family are not Arabia, and neither are they Islam, neither are they the 2 billion strong Muslim Ummah. But I'll check out that book when I get the time to do so. Thanks, David, in Atlanta. We've been around the world already. I have to take a short 3-minute break for a news bulletin. We're discussing the question of the Hajj and whether you could trust Saudi Arabia with it. God willing, when you get back in just 3 minutes, I'll be here. You're watching Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're asking, can the Saudis be trusted with Hajj? Although most of the callers are asking if they can be trusted with anything at all. I myself wouldn't trust the Saudi regime to go out for a loaf of bread, at least without bypassing the shop and heading for the casino instead, probably to gamble my money. I believe that the day is coming when there will be no respectability in the world in dealing with the Saudi royal dictatorship. A British parliamentary committee is about to recommend that Britain suspends arms sales to Saudi Arabia because the arms that Britain is selling them are being used to internally repress their own people and to externally aggress against their neighbors and even distant neighbors. The murder in Yemen, the murder in Bahrain, the murder inside Saudi Arabia itself, and above all, in terms of quantum, the mass murder that they are paying for and weaponizing in Syria, leaves them without a shred of credibility as a trustworthy partner, even a profitable a customer for Western weapons. One day, I believe, the entire Saudi regime will have all their gold Lamborghinis in London, in Paris, in New York, because they will not be welcome in their own country. Now, I made the point earlier that none of this is an attack on the people of Arabia, still less on Sunnis. So let me bring in my next special expert guest, a man who is a Sunni, Ismail Sethi, from the highly respectable organization Minhaj al-Quran. Ismail, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, George, for having me on your show.
Where do you stand on this? Do you share the, I think, quite widespread feeling that the Saudi regime is neither competent enough nor trustworthy enough in other respects to be given, alone at least, the monopoly of running something as important to 2 billion people as the Hajj?
Oh, well, I think the program, the show, the title, Can the Saudi Regime Be Trusted with Hajj? I mean, I think whether they can be trusted with the Hajj or whether they can't be trusted with the Hajj, the bottom line is that as it stands, they have to be trusted with the Hajj. They are in the administration there at the moment. They are the ruling the country as it stands. What we need to understand here is the enormity of the task here. Here we have 2 million people converging together from all parts of the world in a mountainous valley of Mecca, speaking hundreds of different languages, wearing the same clothes in temperatures which are exceeding over 45 degrees. This is a monumental task. And we've seen in the past, I mean, even Western nations, I mean, stampedes at football matches where there's only 20,000-30,000 people. I mean, that is just to put things into context. I mean, but that's not at all taking away from some of the blunders which, you know, could seem to be a problem that we hear year in year out. I mean, I'm a frequent traveler to the Holy Land, and some of the things that I see, it just makes me think, why have they not got some of the basics right? For example, why are there not numerous trains running from Mecca to Medina? This is something which can be done very easily for an oil-rich country like Saudi Arabia. I mean, the service stations from that main road from Mecca to Medina, where the Hujjaj, where the pilgrims travel to and from on a daily basis, not only in the month of Hajj, but throughout the year, the service stations there are worse than service stations that I've seen in the third world. So these are questions which are, we need to put to this regime. And the other thing is the destruction of some of the holy sites there is very sad to see.
Is this commercially driven, Ismail? I mean, I just got the figure this evening. Saudi Arabia earns every year from the Hajj $8 billion. And one of the reasons why they're doing all this work around the Grand Mosque surely is to make even more money. And no Saudi prince would sit on a coach in 45 degrees, inching along the road between Mecca and Medina. No Saudi prince would queue up for half an hour to use an unwashed public lavatory. No Saudi prince would live in the kind of accommodation which pilgrims in Britain are paying up to £3,000 for their Hajj package.
I mean, you're saying, is it a money-making thing? I mean, you know, as someone quite rightly said, that money makes the world go round. I mean, this is not just a problem that we see within Saudi Arabia. I think this is the problem that we see within the entire Muslim world. The only way we're going to sort of like rectify these issues is going to be through political pressure. And I mean, unfortunately, the Muslim world right now is in turmoil. We have Muslim leaders that are, you know, that basically, to put it quite bluntly, don't give a damn about the public. I mean, we have, for example, one of the worst dictators of today, who calls himself the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Nawaz Sharif, who I would say he's the Hitler of our time. He's been given protection again and again by the Saudi regime. This is a man who continues to loot the country and send all his wealth to the Western world. I mean, this is not a problem which is just within Saudi Arabia. This is a problem that we are seeing throughout the Muslim world.
Ismail Seti of Minhaj al-Quran, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Very powerful and eloquent arguments there. Assad is in Texas in the USA. Let's go to him next. Assad, welcome.
Greetings, George. Very quick question first. What is Hajj? First of all, if you just know what is the meaning of Hajj.
Well, what it has become is a tourist trip from which the Saudis can make $8 billion a year with the cut price, cheap and inadequate facilities. The idea of Hajj is, of course, pristine and precious and divine. But that's not most people's experience these days, even if they don't come back dead.
Absolutely. The question is, George, Hajj is a place where everybody wears the same clothing, wears the same ihram. Everybody is equal. There is no distinction between a race or a color or superiority. But how we see the last year, what exactly caused the stampede, was this VIP Hajj pilgrimage, like the VIP people doing Hajj. So I don't see anything in a Muslim aspect around it. Right now there are VIP packages, which I was trying to book for my father, that there is a package where you'll be staying right in the clock tower, you'll be getting fed half a cow or half a whole animal, and for your deals. That is not Hajj. Hajj has become like something, you know, it's totally different. It's like same as Saudi Arabia, being the custodian of the Holy Land. They are not even Muslims, if you say. You know what I mean?
Well,
so I think Saudis are not to be trusted at all.
The Quran itself says that no distinction will be made in the holy places of Mecca and Medina between those who are living therein or who have come from the outside. But everybody knows that is disobeyed to a normal, almost farcical degree. Not only on the class basis that you describe, but on the ethnic and passport. Someone earlier said if you've got a weak passport, you'll be treated very differently from how you'll be treated if you have a strong passport, presumably an American or a British passport. And then there's the issue of doctrinal difference, being deliberately exacerbated by the sectarian regime in power in Riyadh, taunting with their books and their posters and so on, and with their whips if you pray in a marginally different way from how the Wahhabis want you to pray.
Absolutely. This is totally disrespectful. It's like nobody can, Islam is a religion which cannot be forced upon anybody. And there are so many sects of Islam. Did the Holy Prophet go and kill anybody or kill the non-believers? Then why are they practicing such inferiority or kind of derogatory behavior with any other sects of Islam? They don't even consider any other sects of Islam to be Muslims, first of all. So that's a really bad part on them. And the second part of this is like the Grand Muftis and the people of Saudi Arabia. And I heard about it lately, like if you being a Muslim country, the sponsor or the host of the House of God, how can you hire a company which is killing and creating so much problems for the people of Palestine? That's what I heard. G4S is going to be the new service which Saudis have hired to take care of the people of Hajj.
Yeah.
So I don't see that those guys are even Muslims, to be very honest. So trusting them is not a really good issue.
I'm not qualified to takfir them, but the reality is this. This regime, as the Ayatollah Khamenei pointed out, are slaves to the enemies of the Muslims. That can, there can be no debate about that. The Saudi regime.
Absolutely, and I'm so sorry to cut you out, but one more thing, George. There was a recent article which I just read, and they said that the Iranians are being banned from coming to Hajj this year. Like, who would do something like that, you know, if this is, like, you again saying, like, okay, people of Sudan or people of Africa are black, I don't want them to come there. Or the people of Iran are there, so we don't want them to come to Hajj. Mm. Who made them, who gave them this divine authority of accepting and refusing anybody else for the pilgrimage of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Like, I don't get that point.
Assad in Texas, USA, thank you very much indeed for the call. Let's move on to Birmingham, I presume England. Rizwan is on the line. Go ahead, Rizwan. Rizwan, you're on the air.
Yes, I know. Basically, Islamicum, I just wanted to mention three things. Is that the Saudis, they've used it as a business empire, Hajj. They're only using it as a money-making scheme. You look what they've done to Hajj now, how they glamorized it in the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's time. Look at Hajj then and look at Hajj now. They've done it more of a business-making scheme. And the second part and the third thing I want to say is that, Brother Galloway, is who are they to ban people? Like, I was reading an article saying they're banning Iranians. Tomorrow, it could be Pakistanis, then other nationalities. Almighty never said you could ban a Muslim from doing Hajj. For me, it's just all business scheme. That's it, nothing else.
Well, I think it is something else, but you're right. It is a gigantic money-making scam for the regime. $8 billion every year. That buys a lot of gold-plated Lamborghinis that they can then bring to London and park outside the casinos. But it's not just that, is it? They're using it to make money. They're using it to boost their prestige, especially in the West, because most Muslims hate this regime. But the West are fooled into believing that this Al Saud family are somehow the leaders of the Muslim world by virtue of the fact that they are the hosts of the Hajj. And thirdly, they're using it as a tool in their foreign policy by discriminating against particularly Iran, but not only Iran, any country that stands against their policy of slavish obeisance, not to God, but to Mama and the countries, the imperialist countries, who personify the worship of money. Rizwan, thanks for the call. Let's go to Kenya and talk with Hussein. Go ahead, Hussein.
Yeah, George, salam alaikum, George.
Walaikum salam, very welcome in Kenya. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, George. George, the Saudis can't be trusted with anything, anything, absolutely anything, let alone Hajj. Anything. I simply need to say this, George, that you can't trust those people with anything. Thank you, George.
Oh, thank you very much, Hussein. Very brief, but very powerful and absolutely accurate, I believe. But I do want to take this opportunity to again state that nothing that I'm saying is because I'm Iranian, I'm not. Because I'm Shia, I'm not. Because I hate the people of Arabia, I don't. I love them. Not anything to do with hostility towards Sunnis. This is about a tiny, I believe, anti-Muslim regime of 30,000 family members who commit every crime and every sin it is possible to commit whilst claiming at the same time to be trustworthy in terms of ownership. You see the way in which the Kaaba is being dwarfed by luxury development, and there's much more on the way. The Prophet's daughter's house was demolished and replaced by a public lavatory. But that's actually what happened. This clock tower completely dominating. These malls on the American level. Now, Amit is in Saudi Arabia, and it's only fair and right that I go to him first. Next, Amit, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Amit? Amit? Well, Amit wanted to defend the Saudi regime, which is why I went to him. Amit, A-M-I-T, in Saudi Arabia. I'm stressing that, Amit, so you can collect your subvention in the morning. But you didn't have the courage of your convictions and you ran away. But we heard a little bit of your voice. So you can tell them that you at least showed up, even if you didn't stay long. We've been asking this evening if the Saudis can be trusted with Hajj. Not even Amit in Saudi Arabia was ready to defend. The sheer scale of the incompetence and venality that is self-evident to anyone who has viewed these events, not just last year's events, but they're the freshest, the rawest of events. The British Parliamentary Committee that is going to have to advise the British government of the unwise continuation of a policy of selling weapons to people who repress their own population and invade and even occupy and seek to destroy so many surrounding countries. Now, I'm told that Amit is back on the line from Saudi Arabia. I'm very glad to hear it. Amit, go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. George. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes.
What would you like to say? Can the Al Saud family be trusted with the Hajj?
Yes. We are living on the Saudi, and we are doing job. There is a good arrangement for safety and security in the Saudi. They are sending SMS for Hajj helpline. Actually, we are daily receiving Hajj helpline number also. So there is a good arrangement for the safety and security, and everything is going right. And we must believe for the safety and security of the Hajj people.
What happened last year then? What happened last year?
That was mishappening, but we can't say what was the detail. Actually, the detail is going on, inquiry is going on. We can't say anything about that.
It's been going on for a year. When are we going to see the results of this year-long inquiry?
It is up to the Saudi government. It will be clear that. But we are not knowing the detail about that. We are the general citizen.
You're a citizen, are you?
Yeah?
You're a citizen of Saudi Arabia.
Yes. I'm still in Saudi Arabia. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The feeling that has been expressed by Muslims all evening here is that this is a money-making, $8 billion business controlled by one family who gave their name to the country, that it is politicized by them and used as part of their feuds with all and sundry around them, Bahrain, Yemen, Iran, Syria, and even Iraq, and that it would be far better if the control of the holy places was in the hands of a representative committee from the entire Muslim Ummah. Do you see any strength in that argument?
Pardon, please? Friends?
I'm sorry.
Oh, Pardon, please?
We'll have to move on because Amit is no longer making even the sense he was making earlier. David is in Glasgow. Last call. David, welcome.
How are you doing, George?
By the grace of God, I'm good. Looking forward to the Old Firm game on Saturday.
Yes, well, I'm a Partick Thistle fan myself, so I have no interest in it. Anyway,
so you never look forward to any games?
Anyway, the Saudi family in Saudi Arabia are capitalists. The same as the UK royal family are also capitalists. You understand? So the question is, do you trust capitalists with religious holy places? That's the question.
Mm.
At the end of the day, people will even change their religion for a shilling. You understand? If it means making money. And that's the same as the UK royal family, right? Because the British Parliament is in England, because the British Parliament is located in England, the Church of England is, they interfere with the British Parliament. Am I correct?
Not really, no.
They've
got a very few places in the House of Lords, but they don't interfere in the political decision-making. They speak on moral and spiritual issues. David, we've spoken before. I've no doubt we'll speak again, but unfortunately, we've now run out of time. I think it's been a terrific discussion this evening, much better than I anticipated. You can continue the discussion on Twitter at @comment_PressTV. If you've enjoyed the show, God willing, I'll be back here next week presenting it again.
Hello, if you comment, put your name and the face of your account number. And just make sure
the phone volume is set up to
0. Can you spell your name for me? Yeah, I know. You can directly put through this phone number and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?
Okay, so...